last verse as well. So we're at Psalms 122, and I'll begin reading at verse number 1. I was glad when they said unto me, "Let us go into the house of the Lord." Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, they shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls, and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within thee. And together in verse 9. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. And let's pray and get it right into it. Father, do pray now, once again, for your help, your power. Lord, I believe that this is, as we mentioned this morning, the source of truth. Father, it won't be what it needs to be unless, Lord, you accompany it in power. Because the Spirit of truth, Lord, needs to move in our hearts and convince us of the truth. And so, Lord, I pray that you'd help us do that tonight. Use me. This is how you have set things up, the foolishness of preaching. But it's the power of God in that preaching that makes the difference. And I pray that would be the case tonight. Now we ask for these things in Christ's name. Amen. And you may be seated. Now, often I will quote Spurgeon in these Psalms. I don't think I have a Spurgeon quote this time. But if you study out Psalms 122, whether it's Spurgeon or others, the key word that most people use in talking about Psalms 122, teaching this psalm, the word that springs the mind almost as you read it is the word joy. Now, the word joy itself is not in the psalm, but the psalm makes you consider or think about or remind you of joy. So even though the word isn't there, the concept is there. Now, I'm going to remind you the difference between happiness and joy. Now, let me also take a little detour and talk about the bus for a moment. We sang a song today, and this is interesting because, you know, again, I write these sermons up ahead of time for different reasons. And sometimes when I'm getting ready to preach them, things that day have occurred that connect with that particular sermon, which I find sometimes humorous, funny, and maybe just sometimes providential. But today on the bus, I was getting ready to lead a song. I'm in right, out right, up right, down right, happy all the time. And we have a kid on our bus, a good kid, Zayden. And Zayden said, corrected me. This bus kid corrected me. We're going to miss that kid. That bus kid corrected me. He said, "No, we're not happy all the time. We're joyful all the time." And I said, "You're right, Zayden, you're right." So I don't know if it is Miss Molly teaching that or the junior church teacher. Somewhere he's getting it. It came right to him. And so there is a difference between happiness and joy. Even our bus kids know this. I hope you know this. When we think of happiness, happiness is typically the thrill of the moment. It's outward based. Things happen and bring a thrill to us, and we call that happiness. Okay, so it's an outward-based thrill of the moment. That's not necessarily a negative. It's not saying it's a sinful thrill. It just means something's happening, and at that moment, there's a happiness because of it. So happiness is the thrill of the moment, and it's typically outward-based. Joy is different. Joy is the thrill of the soul. It's inward-based, something that's going on inside. So whatever is happening outside is not why we're joyful. It's something that's happening inside, typically the work of God in us. So it's the thrill of the soul, an inward base. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this inward thrill of the soul, this joy that the Lord gives us. Now that's important to understand because God does not promise us happiness. Now a lot of folks, their idea that if you live for Jesus, there should be a happy life of living for Jesus. Well, a lot of folks lost their life living for Jesus. People being burned at the stake, my guess is they were not happy. Joyful maybe, happy not. And so I think that's a misunderstanding. So God does not promise us happiness, but he does provide for our joy. Provides for our joy. Whether or not we have joy is up to us, but he provides for our joy. Now let me show you a couple of verses what I mean by this, and then we'll zero in on this topic based on Psalms 122. Go with me to Psalms 30, if you will. And Brother Gasser, if you, again, will hit me down a notch. Proverbs 30, it was good this morning, but maybe my voice is stronger because I wasn't on the bus this afternoon or right before the service. Psalms 30, if you will, and look with me at verse 8. Psalms 30 and verse 8. That's a good psalm. Psalms 30 is a good psalm. And so, what's that? Did I? Wow, that is interesting. All right, so look with me. You know, the other thing about when I write my sermons weeks ahead of time, I don't always remember the verses that I was thinking of when I wrote the verse, the sermon. Well, let's just look at it. All right, we'll start picking up in verse 7. It's all good. Verse 7, Lord, by thy favor thou hast made my mountain to stand strong. Thou didst hide thy face, and I was troubled. I cry to thee, O Lord, and unto the Lord I made supplication. What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? Shall the dust praise thee? Shall I declare thy truth? Hear, O Lord, and have mercy upon me. Lord, be thou my helper. Okay, so the idea here is this. In whatever's going on, we have a source of joy, something that provides for our joy. All of these things may be happening around us, but notice what the psalmist is doing. He's looking to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, and have mercy upon me. Lord, be thou my helper. So he's seeking the Lord. That's the providing for our joy, even in outward circumstances that may not be happy about. Let me show you. Go with me to John 16. John 16. John 16, verse 20. Verily, verily, so I'm John 16, 20. Verily, verily, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice. And now watch the flip here. And ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. So even though there are things that cause us to weep and lament, things that cause us to be sorrowful, there is still a provision for joy in those things. Go with me to John 17. John 17. Look with me at verse 13. John 17, verse 13. And now come I to thee, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. And so even in all of these things, the Lord is saying, all these bad things are happening, he still wants, notice verse 13, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. So this is the idea that even though it may not be happiness, but there is provision for joy even in those difficult times. So let's go back now to Psalms 122. And I want to talk this evening from Psalms 122 about this idea of joy. Now we're in a group of psalms that we're calling the Ascension Psalm. Okay, and I say it again, as the Jews were traveling up to Jerusalem, they would use these psalms, and that's they ascended. For us, we're not traveling to Jerusalem, we're traveling to heaven, or we're going upward in our Christian life, and so that's how we look at it. Joy as we're going towards heaven, joy as we're going forward in our Christian life. So on this topic with joy, there's three things I want you to consider. Go back to Psalms 122, look with me at verse 1, and I'll point out the first one. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. So the idea is, they haven't got there, let's go. And then he says in verse 2, and when we get there, we're going to be glad or we're going to be joyful. So that brings us to the first thought. Number one is this, we should have an expectant joy. Something we're expecting brings us joy. We should have an expectant joy. So this joy that they're talking about here in Psalms 122 is based on what they expected to attain and what we expect to attain at the end of our journey. That's what he says in verse 2. Shall stand within thy gates. When we get there, when we get to Jerusalem, it's going to be great. Now, we're not there yet. We're on the journey. But when we get there, it's going to be great. So there's an expectancy to that joy. Their joy would end at their expected destination. Now, watch. Their journey would end at their expected destination. and so will ours. I know my destination. My destination's heaven. And that place in heaven, I think this, when we get to heaven, I don't think we're going to go like this. Really? That's all there is? Huh. I thought it'd be bigger than this. I don't think that's how we'll be. I think we're going to be like, wow, and wow, and wow. I think we're going to have a great joy when we get to heaven. So their journey would end at their expected destination, and so would ours. And that expected destination is heaven. Our joy is not based, let me slow down for a moment, because I'm going to make a pivot here. Our joy is not based on what this world holds, but what that world holds. Now, this is important to get. If I look back over, I am 58 years of age. And if I look, we're going to erase that part out of the tape. I am not 60, okay? So I'm younger than 60. How's that? At 58 years of age, if I look back on my journey, now I began the journey on purpose when I was a teenager. For sure, at 17, I knew I was born again, and at 17, I was called to preach. That's 41 years ago. That's hard for me to imagine. 41 years ago, I was walking back and forth in my bedroom thinking, I think I'm saved, I might be saved, could be saved, I'm sure I'm saved, maybe I'm saved. And finally said, Lord, I got to get this thing settled. It wasn't long after that the Lord began moving my heart, leading me into the decision to go into full-time ministry. Now, if I look over those years, I can see how the Lord has, and I would say this, I would hope that I'm different after 41 years. If I don't know any more or have not grown at all my Christian life after 41 years, if I was still the same 17-year-old level of maturity in my Christian life, I would be very ashamed and very worried. But if I look at how I've grown, how the Lord has grown me over those 41 years, this, what I'm about to talk about, is probably one of the big areas he's grown me in. Understanding that this world is not the focus of my joy or the reception of my joy or even to expect joy in this world, but the world to come, what that world holds. Let me show you a couple of verses and maybe I can explain it better. Go with me to John 14. Look with me at verse 1. Very famous verses about this. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you into myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. The expectancy of heaven, that's the source of our joy, that we have this expectancy of that world. We, as believers, are pilgrims on this earth. We are just like Abraham. We have left our home and we are traveling to the promised land. Now, as I've grown in my Christian life, I've become more and more aware of this truth here, and this truth has become more impactful in my life. I can think of times in my life when what was going on in this world really, really would get to me. It would really bother me. At 18 years of age, when 16 years of age when President Reagan was running the first time, and then at 20 years of age when he was running the second time, man, I was zeroed in on everything that was going on politically, socially, economically in this nation. I had opinion about everything. I had a thought about everything. I was really entrenched in certain things. Not so much anymore. One of the reasons is this. First of all, this world doesn't hold much to me like it used to. Second thing is this, I realize there's nothing in this world that's really going to bring the joy. It doesn't matter who gets voted in and who gets voted out. It's just different shades of the same thing. And I realize if I put my expectancy in this world, I'm always going to be disappointed. And I've learned more and more that I'm traveling to a place. I'm just traveling through this land. I have some concerns for it because I'm traveling through it. I want it to be a decent place while I'm traveling through it. I'm not saying I'm, you know, it's just like the environment. I may not be a hardcore environmentalist. That's an understatement. I'm definitely not. But I don't think I ought to take 55-gallon drums of radioactive waste and start pouring in every creek. Okay, don't be silly. I think we ought to take care of our environment, but I'm not going to kill myself and bring myself to poverty in trying to do that. So there's a expectant joy that I have, and that expectant joy is in that world to come. Now let's talk a little bit more about that. Go with me to Hebrews. Hebrews 11. Now, I'm not saying ignore what's going on in this world. We live in the world, and we are the salt and light, and there are some expected behaviors the Lord has for us. But we can't, our life can't get turned upside down because of what's happening in this world. Hebrews 11, look with me at verse number 8. Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, which whose builder and maker is God. Now drop down to verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Now, that's exactly what we talked about in our Sunday school lesson. We are strangers and pilgrims on this earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had an opportunity of return. If they had only, if the only thing Abraham had thought about is, oh, Ur of the Chaldees, boy, I remember that. Oh, the good old days. Oh, I wish I was there. If all he thought about was Ur of Chaldees, he might have returned back to the Ur of Chaldees. But he didn't. He knew there was a place that the Lord had for him, and he kept going that direction. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. So there's this expectant joy that we should have. Something we're expecting in that world, in that place where we're going to end up, that destination. Right now, we're thinking about it, and we're saying, when we get there, boy, it's going to be great. But we're still in the traveling mode. There's an expectant joy. We may find happiness in the events of this world, and there are a lot of things we can be happy about. We can be happy about birthdays, and you had Thanksgiving most likely with your family. We had Thanksgiving with our family. There's a happiness about it. You get a raise. There's a happiness about it. You get a new vehicle. There's a happiness about it. There's a lot of things that can bring happiness into someone's life. And I'm not saying that happiness in itself is wrong. We may find happiness in the events of this world. But the believer's true joy is always found in the hope of the world to come. That's the thing that inwardly motivates us and animates us, a true joy in the soul, a thrill of the soul, because we know where we're going. And even if everything around us is falling apart, we still have a joy because there's an expectant end to where we're going to end up. So we should have an expectant joy. That's what moves us. That's how we deal with all that's going on. You know, how do people handle with Michigan beating Ohio State? We say, well, someday we're going to be in heaven, and always the Buckeyes will win in heaven. All right, back to Psalms 122. I don't know if that's true. the Browns won't because they couldn't win it. The Browns aren't going to heaven, that's why. But anyways, Psalms 122. Look back with me to verse 1. I don't know if that's true either. I'm just being sarcastic. Psalms 122, verse 1. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house, O Lord, or our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Now notice what it says next. Jerusalem is builded as a city, now watch this phrasing, that is compact together. Whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, into the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. This brings us to our second, and I'll come back to this idea of compact together in a moment. So number one is we should have an expectant joy. Number two is we should have a collective joy. Now, this is interesting, because when the Jews made these trips to Jerusalem, they seldom went by themselves. First of all, it was dangerous. You know, if you're one all by yourself along the road, and some road agent comes along, some thief, some bandit comes along, you're kind of, you know, your goose is cooked. And so they would travel in groups that allowed for safety. It also allowed for fellowship. Depending on where you're coming from, that's a long journey. And it can kind of boring. So you wanted someone to travel with you. It kind of helped it to go along. So there was safety in numbers. There was fellowship in numbers. me show you what I mean. Go with me to Luke chapter 2. Look with me in verse 41. Now his parents, this is Jesus, his parents, Mary and Joseph. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, this group of people that were traveling together, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. That's exactly what's happening. They're making this journey to Jerusalem. They're ascending to Jerusalem, exactly what we talked about, these ascension psalms. And they're going as a group, and they just assumed that Jesus was there. So they would travel in these groups. So now watch this statement, because this is everything I'm going to say next is based on this statement. Okay, so we should have a collective joy. Here's the statement. Their collective journey brought them collective joy. Because they did this as a group, doing it as a group was a source of joy. Our journey as well is not a solo trip. Now, your getting saved is a personal decision. But did you know this, that you're not the only person who's going to heaven? There's a whole lot of people, not as many as we want, but there's a whole lot of people who are going to heaven. And I would hope there's a whole lot of people here tonight who's going to heaven. It's not a solo trip. We're in this thing together on this journey. We're journeying together. There's a collective journey that's happening here. So our journey is not a solo trip. We are journeying with other pilgrims with the same shared hope. Now, the more we share in the same purpose and the more we share in the same direction, the more we can share in the same labor and the same burden. And that shared purpose and that shared labor brings a shared joy. God has designed a Christian life to be lived joyfully, and part of it joyfully, as we live among others who are also on the same journey. When we think about unity among believers, it is not simply, let's just play nice and get along. Sometimes when people talk about unity, they're like, well, you know, I really don't like them, but for the sake of unity, I'm not going to say anything. Okay, well, that's better than causing a big fuss, I guess, but that's really not how God wants. God doesn't want it where I really hate those people, but I'm just going to pretend I don't. God would rather you not hate them. God would rather you love each other and journey together and find joy in the journey. Unity among believers isn't just play nice and get along. Rather, this idea of unity among believers is a major source of joy. So let me slow down again. God has provided for our joy. One way he's provided for our joy is to understand that we're heading to a place. This is not our place. We have to live here. There's things we have to deal with. As citizens, there's responsibilities we have, but we have an expectant end. So when you get all bummed out with what's happening in the world, can I tell you? That's on you, not on God. God didn't intend for you to be focused on this world as far as all of the things that are happening. Our focus is the souls of men. And then we have an expectant end. And when we isolate ourselves, here's what we do. We isolate ourselves and don't want to enter into anyone else's lives. We want to be all to ourselves as we're only our own little desert island here. No one, I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm not going to engage with anyone. I'm not going to be involved in anyone's life. I'm not going to care. They have their problems. I have mine. They need to deal with their issues. Well, I deal with my issues. And, everyone's responsible for themselves. There's some truth to that, but also we have a collective responsibility. And when you fail to do that, you're robbing yourself of the source of joy that God wants for you. Did you know that there's a joy in entering into someone else's life and helping them carry their burden? When someone else is going through a hard time or difficult time, and you enter in and you help them carry that burden, there's a joy in that. There's a joy in encouraging someone. There's a joy in helping someone. There's a joy in a certain sweat equity when you're helping someone labor and get something done, even in a physical sense. So this unity among believers is a source of joy that God has provided for believers. It's how he encourages us and helps us through our own difficult times. Those who forsake this collective joy, now watch, those who forsake this collective joy risk their own individual joy as well. And I'm going to show you the verses. In fact, go with me to Proverbs 27. But here's what I'm going to say to you. You live as if you're the only person in the world and you're not. I take care of my problems. They need to take care of their problems. You go ahead and live that way. You're robbing yourself of joy because God did not intend for you to live that way. Proverbs 27. Look with me in verse 17. Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. The Lord designed our Christian life to work with other people so that there is a movement between us that helps each of us to be better, increases our joy. Hebrews 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Verse 23. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. So the command in verse 3 is this kind of personal, hold fast the profession of your faith. Look at verse 24. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. Now it's broadening. Now I'm considering each other, and I'm provoking. I'm considering them, they're considering me. We're provoking each other to love and to good works. Then verse 25, which is the common verse, not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together. The reason that we assemble together is not simply because I just got to go to church because the Bible says I go to church. Well, it does, but it's more than that. It's how we provoke each other. It's how we consider each other. It's how we work in each other's life and bringing joy and then bringing joy to us. As a manner some is, but exhorting one another and so much more as you see the day approaching. So there is this collective joy. Now let's go back to Psalms 1 and 22. I want to talk a little bit more about it. I'm not sure if you want to hear more about it, but I want to talk more about it. Psalm 122, verse 3. Notice what it says. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Now that's an interesting phrase. It's compact together. The idea there is it's well, let me show you. Go with me to Exodus 26. Instead of explaining it, I'll read the verse, and then when I explain it, it'll just be like, yeah, of course. Exodus 26, verse number 3. He's talking about now building the tabernacle. And it says, the five curtains shall be coupled together. That phrase, coupled together, is the same phrase about in 122 that says, compact together. It's the same phrasing. The five curtains shall be coupled together. Verse 6. And thou shalt make 50 tashes of gold and couple the curtains together. Same phrasing. Verse 9. And thou shalt couple five curtains by themselves and six curtains by themselves in those units like that. Go down to verse 11. And thou shalt make 50 tashes of brass and put the tashes into loops and couple the tent together that it may be one. What he's saying is the Lord has designed the Christian life to compact us together, coupled us together, to connect us together. The Christians are to be connected together like these different parts of the tabernacle were coupled together as well. There's an old story. I like it. Maybe it's just something story someone made up, but I think it's very applicable. So there's a fellow in the church who kind of got a little sideways about some things and quit coming. He just wasn't there. He wasn't there for this week and next week and next week. And, you know, a couple months went by and he just wasn't there. Finally, the pastor went out. And the guy was kind of a type guy. So the pastor goes out to see what's going on with the guy. And, you know, he was just, that was the guy. Not the pastor, the guy. So the pastor shows up, and he knows his guy is not really happy to see him. So he just sits there, and there was a fireplace, and there, you know, some wood was burning, and the pastor's just sitting there looking at the fire, and the guy's looking at the fire, and finally the pastor went over and got the big tongs and pulled out a chunk of the hot coal and just pulled it out to the edge, away from everything else, and just pulled it out. And the guy's, you know, he's kind of watching what the pastor's doing, and they just sit there, and eventually. The fire, the coals are still hot, but that one piece he took out began cooling down. It was red. Now it's getting cooler and cooler. It's kind of white, smoking a little bit, getting cooler and cooler and cooler. And then he grabs the tongs, the pastor does, and puts that now kind of cool coal and puts it back into the rest of the coals, and all of a sudden it gets red hot again. And he puts the tongs away, and he looks over at the guy, and the guy looks at him and he says, "You're right. I'll be there Sunday." Because that's exactly like us. When we're around other believers, it warms us. It makes us better. You live by yourself. Let me stop. You say, "Pastor White, let me help you. And I appreciate your help." You say, "Pastor White, let me help you. This is Sunday night. We're the ones who are here." You're right. Can I tell you? People have said that before, and then they weren't. Because they forgot what I'm telling you. You need it. God didn't make Sunday night and Wednesday night or even Sunday morning as a punishment. He didn't say, "Oh, you love me? Come to church. I'll teach you a lesson." That's not why he made church. He made church for our own good. I'm better because of it. You're better because of it. We are collectively joyful in this journey as we journey together, understanding we're doing this together. It is a much more joyful journey when we're journeying with other pilgrims. So we should have a expectant joy. We should have a collective joy. Let me show you the third one. That brings us back to Psalms 122. So they were expecting something. "Let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand." They were journeying in connection with others. Something about how Jerusalem was built and whether the tribes go up. In other words, the same idea that we're going up here together. And then it brings us to verse number 4. "Whether the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, into the testimony of Israel to give," watch this, "to give thanks unto the name of the Lord, for there are set thrones of judgment and the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within thee. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good." So not only is there an expectant joy and a collective joy, but number 3 is this: we should have a promoted joy. Now, when it comes to the idea of happiness, and the reason that we don't focus, happiness is not bad. Okay, I don't want you to walk away tonight and say, "Pastor White says we should never be happy." I'm not saying that. I'm not saying happiness is bad. I'm not saying it's evil. I'm not saying happy people are backslidden people. I'm not saying that. You can be totally right with God and be happy. Yes, you can. What I'm saying is we don't focus on the happiness, because the happiness is comes and goes and it's here and there and the next thing it's no longer there and here it comes again. But joy is something that can abide all the time. So we focus on the joy that God has provided. Okay, the reason that we don't want to focus on happiness too much is this: that believers, now watch, will never out-happiness the world. We can never be happier than the world is, because we don't live for what the world lives for. We're not going to, if we're living for the things of the world, then we're not living for God. And so if I'm living for God, I'm not living for the things of the world. And so I cannot out-happiness the world. We're promoting joy. We're not promoting happiness. I'm not saying, again, not saying happiness is wrong, but that's not what we're promoting. We're promoting joy. The world lives for things that make them happy. They live for money. They live for fame. They live for success. That's not how we're supposed to be living. Now, we may be just as happy, we may be more happy than the world, but we're not living like the world to be happy, or at least we should not be. What we want to promote to this world is not happiness, but joy. We want the world to know that there's a true inner joy that endures even in very unhappy times. You can have tears going down your eyes, you can have tears going down your eyes and have joy in your heart. You can be sitting at your house saying, "Man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I am just don't know what I'm going to do," and still have joy in your heart. You can have enemies attacking you. You can have people lying about you. You can have financial catastrophe on the horizon and still have joy. That's what the world needs to know. That's not how the world lives. The world lives from happiness to happiness. They run to happiness and get as much as they can, and when all that falls apart, they go crazy and run somewhere else to try to get happiness and get as much as they can. When that falls apart, they run somewhere else. That's why the world's crazy. It's running to and fro, always trying to find something else to make them happy. That's not how we live. We're not living like we're some drug addict looking for the next high. We have a peace and a joy that the Lord gives. This is what we need to promote to the world. We have a joy in our soul that doesn't change because of the circumstances of life at that particular time. Now, you've been very good. And as a reward, we're going to have a quick Bible study because I know how much you love the Bible. So I want us to understand joy from a biblical perspective. We talked about an expectant joy. We talked about a collective joy. Now we're talking about a promoted joy. What kind of joy are we promoting? That's what I'm going to, and let's take a couple minutes. It won't be that long. I'm going to give you three statements, and I'm going to show you a verse that supports each statement. Statement number one. So I'm trying to promote joy to the world, not happiness, joy. Here's the first thing I need the world to understand. In my life, by how I'm living, this is what I need them to understand. Number one is this. Our joy is the result of our choice. Now, what I'm about to say can be offensive, and I understand. But it's true, and so I'm going to say it. You have as much joy as you choose to have. Your lack of joy is no one's fault but your own. Joy is a result of your choice. Now, let me clarify so that I don't sound like I'm just being flippant about it. When I say it's a result of your choice, it's not simply a choice of, okay, I'll have joy. Okay, obviously, I have no more joy than I did a moment ago. I don't mean it that way. What I mean is this. The choice is what you focus on, what you're going after, how you're living your life. That kind of choice determines whether you're going to have joy. Go with me to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. This, again, this is what we're promoting to the world. We're promoting we're promoting choice to the world. That's kind of funny in the current abortion argument. We're pro-choice when it comes to joy. All right? James chapter 1. Look with me at verse number 2. My brethren, count it all, what's the next word? Joy. When you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have a perfect work, complete work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. And then it goes on. We won't go through all the verses. But what he's talking about is this. I get to choose joy when I'm going through these difficulties. How? Because I know that God is bringing about something in my life. So when something comes in my life that I don't like, this is flippant, I know, and I'm not trying to make anything, I'm not trying to be callous towards if you're going through some difficulty, and this is kind of a flippant thing, but for me there are times, okay, I don't really know what the problem is between me and computers. It's a love-hate relationship. I love to hate them, and so I get so frustrated with computers. It's like they used to say AI is taking over the world. It's like, really, you can't get a computer that works right. How's it going to take over the world? So I'm sitting there, and when I'm in my office, I will literally stop. I'll take my glasses off like this, and I'll say, Lord, what are you trying to teach me? Because right now, I just really want to bust this machine. I want to throw something. What is wrong with this machine? I have pushed the same button 3 times, and it keeps doing 3 different things. What is wrong with you? Now, 9 times out of 10, it's me. I know that. And I got to say, okay, maybe I'm not pushing the right button. But when I always stop and say, Lord, I really do not want to be all frustrated. I don't want to be like this. What are you trying to teach me? And when that happens, here's what usually happens. Now I realize, you know, there's something bigger than my frustration at the moment. Now again, I know you go through bigger things, and I'm not trying to make light of what you're going through. What I'm saying is, when we recognize the Lord's in charge, Even in difficult things, there's a source of joy because I know he's at work even in my heartache and hurts of life. So here's the first thing. Our joy is a result of our choice. Choices we're making, what we're going to focus on, how we're going to live our life, how we're going to handle things, are we going to keep the Lord first in this? Here's the second thing I want you to understand about joy. This is what we're trying to promote to the world. They can have joy. If they know Christ as Savior, they can have joy if they make the right choices. So that's number one. Number two is this. Our joy, and this kind of goes hand in hand, but I want to emphasize this. Our joy is not dependent on our circumstance. Joy is never circumstantial. Joy is always by choice and by decision. Go with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Look with me at verse 1. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1. Now this is what we're trying to promote to the world. This kind of joy we're explaining to them. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality, their giving. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. These believers, notice what it says. Let me back up. We do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. So these believers in Macedonia, they were in a great trial of affliction, but there was an abundance of joy even in their deep poverty. So joy is not dependent on our circumstance. I got to go quickly. Here's the third thing I would say. This is the joy we're promoting. There's choice involved. It's not dependent on circumstance. And here's the third thing. Go with me to Hebrews 12 and I'll show you the verse and I'll give you the third. Hebrews 12. And this will lead me into basically a conclusion. Hebrews 12. Look with me at verse 1. Wherefore, seeing we also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Now watch what happens. Notice what he begins saying. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Now, he's saying that in the idea of running with patience the race, finishing the race. We look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. In other words, he ran his race with patience. How? Because he had this joy that was set before him. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. In other words, you're not going to run with patience a race that's set before you unless you do what Jesus did, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising shame, and so forth. That brings us to the third thought. It's a result of choice. It's not dependent on our circumstance. And third is this, our joy will enable us to finish our course. Joy is essential. We promote it because it helps us to finish our course. So here's the statement. I need to get to the end of the message. Long-term, faithful, productive believers are those who have joy. Productive believers. Now, there are people who are in church, have been in church for, 300 years, but they're not productive. I've met people like that. I can tell you over the years, I've met people, they would never miss a service, but they're dusty and rusty. I mean, you don't want to be around them. They're bitter, crotchety old people. They're like, every time you're around them, how are you doing? You're like, well, man, I'm sorry I asked. Okay, I'm not talking about just being around until they just finally push you over into the grave. Okay, I'm talking about being faithful and productive. Your life is counting for Christ over a long period of time. Those are the believers who have joy. And it's often that joy that sets them apart from others and causes them to have a testimony that truly promotes God's grace. It is this joy, all these things we talked about, this result, this choice, this not dependent on circumstance, we're finishing our course. This type of promoting joy is what helps us to promote our Savior. People know us. Hey, something's different about you. Jesus is the difference. He's given me joy. So let's come bring it to an end. Our pilgrimage through this world will have times of happiness, and thank God for that. But also, it will have times of great sorrow. There are people sitting in here who have endured great sorrow that most people in this room don't know that they've endured. I know because I've had some conversations with them, and they've shared some things with me. And I'm like, wow, I would have never known that about you. They've gone through some great heartache and heartbreak in life. Now, you look at them and you're like, they probably never had a problem in their life because they have joy. But they don't have joy because they didn't have any problems. They got through the problems because they had the joy. So our pilgrimage through this world will have times of happiness and also times of great sorrow. But it is the ongoing joy of the Lord that helps us to endure and testify of God's grace to others. Someday, we will stand within the gates of the heavenly city. Now think about that for a moment. We will stand within the gates of the heavenly city. We will, at that moment in time, when we're in the gates of the heavenly city, we will rejoice for God's grace and God's mercy. There is a time of great joy coming. The sad thing is this, we miss it today because we don't understand what we're going to have. And all we say is, well, look what's happening here and why this isn't, and this isn't right. And we get so sidetracked. And what God is saying is, understand what's going to, there's an expectancy. And there is this, not only is this expectancy, but there is this collective, look at the fellow believers. Look at the people you can invest in, and they're investing in you. And understand, we can promote this, and we can live a testimony that shines for Christ this way. We will rejoice on that day for God's grace and mercy. So therefore, let us live today like these pilgrims who are joyfully, expectantly looking forward to that day.